Stanton, tell us a little bit. This being the 51st anniversary now of this very strange, incredible case, a case that I'm sure has even perplexed you for many, many years. How did you get involved in it?
Well, it was a casual involvement until Frank gave me a call something over a year ago to participate in the 50th anniversary event. They're having a celebration in Flatwoods. And so I did a lot of checking at that time to see whether I wanted to get mixed up with this case. I mean, and I was quite impressed with most of the stuff I read, so I went down to Flatwoods and got a chance to meet Mrs. May, one of the key witnesses, and her son and other people, the mayor of the town who had that particular UFO fly over her head, and to go to the exact location to the tree under which the so-called monster had moved, see the place where the object had come down, landed is the best word I can think of, and the gully where it had kind of gone to after that for a while. And also to look at a lot of the data that Frank had gathered, and I was very impressed. And part of it is a kind of historical thing. You know, I've been now to 20 different archives and looked at an awful lot of information, official government information, not just because of Roswell,
right,
but the whole picture. And I was very impressed how the timing of this thing. You know, I've been a booster, if you will, of the early Majestic 12 report.
Mm-hmm.
And they suggest, dated 18 November 1952, the briefing for President-elect Eisenhower, which is only a couple of months after Flatwoods, that there was an enormous amount of activity that fall. Everybody heard about the sightings in Washington in July, late July 1952, you know, over the White House and jets being scrambled and seeing UFOs and several different radars around the Washington region picking them up.
Right.
And this is kind of an extension of that, and it's kind of strange. Before I went to West Virginia, I'd been on a radio show back east where a man called in who'd been based at Andrews Air Force Base, and he said, we were scrambling jets all that year after July, including one case where two went up and only one came down.
Mm-hmm.
So this seemed to fit into the pattern. And when I saw all the stuff that Frank had gathered, you know, not just a sighting report in Flatwoods, but from all over the East Coast, I was very impressed that this was a crucial event.
Well, and you don't partner up with a lot of people until you do a lot of homework into what they're doing.
That's right. And I was very favorably impressed with Frank. So we've had a lot of communication since that time. We had met, actually, several years ago at a UFO conference in Florida. But now that I've gotten to know him and we email back and forth a lot and exchange information, I feel that this is an important case. It's different from all the other cases in terms of the so-called monster, which we're not talking about a Bigfoot here.
No, not at all.
What seems to be a mechanical device, perhaps with an alien inside. And the fact that Frank had talked to crucial people that nobody else had talked to, he'll tell you about that. Colonel Levitt, for example, the National Guard commander, who was there that night after all the confusion about what happened in Flatwoods. And the reporter, Mr. Stewart, who was there that night. He was a local person. And Frank has these people on tape. And other people, I was also depressed, of course, by the usual debunking. Everybody knows that was a big owl. Boy, 10 feet high is an awful big
owl. It's a big owl. And let me say, getting them on tape is critical because, as you know, Stan, people get older, they die off, and
yep,
once they're gone, they're gone.
As far as I'm concerned, they are, anyway.
Yeah, well, in most cases, until we do other parts of this kind of program. Frank, what sparked your interest in this particular case, besides the fact that it was close to your cousin's farm?
What sparked my interest is when I started looking into the case of what had been reported and written about over the years, and when I started talking to some of the people who were actually involved, it was completely opposite of the coverage. The story had become so distorted and twisted over the years, you have no idea.
Did it start off as merely a UFO-type story? We saw lights, we saw an object?
Actually, that night, there was sightings along the East Coast from the New York area all the way down to South Carolina. And it wasn't one object. There were several of them, and they were sighted by literally thousands of people. This wasn't a little isolated incident just in Flatwoods. And how I got deeper, as I got deeper into the project, I looked outside of Flatwoods, which no one else had done or researched up to that point. This was not an isolated incident.
Well,
seen along the whole coast.
In the email that I just read before you and Stan came on, it testifies to that this person was in Pennsylvania at the time.
That's right.
And saw what ended up probably being the Flatwoods case or some of them. So do you believe at that time, then, that we might have been involved in some kind of UFO flap, some kind of a wave?
Oh, absolutely, especially that night. You have the flap going back in July of 52 over Washington and early August of 52, and then you go right into September. So you have July, August, September, 3 months right in a row of flaps. But the flap over the eastern seaboard that night was unbelievable. There was over 20 UFOs sighted that night.
And were they all reporting generally the same thing, those that saw these craft close, the same kind of structure, the oval-looking craft?
The majority of them were. As I researched deeper into the project, I found out different parts of the country had different shaped UFOs. Not too many the disc-shaped, but more cigar-shaped, as well as the elliptical oval.
And Stan, as you began to learn more about this case, what did you find to be so unusual? Because, again, with UFO, because I've known you for so many years now, I know the stories and the cases that you chase and those that you don't. And the ones that you go after, you've got a strong belief in them, and you don't let go. You're like a bulldog. In this particular case, what was it that got you to really want to jump in on it?
Well, frankly, it was exactly 51 years ago tonight, being with Frank as we were on site. Very important, because you could see the situation in which Mrs. May and the children, we better go back and say that kids were playing football down below in a schoolyard, saw this thing swing around and go up and appear to land, come down on a hill nearby, and they went charging off to follow up the hill. And when you saw the actual location, particularly the fact that the flat area where this came down was the only cleared area at the top of the hill, and many pilots have told me, if you've got to come down where it's flat. Don't run into mountains. And there were steep gullies and so forth. Well, here's an area, once you looked at it, well, of course they went down there. Aliens aren't stupid. The craft seemed to be in trouble. That's an important part of this story. Either burning or, in difficulty. It wasn't zipping around. It was moving slowly.
And this then wasn't a planned landing by any means.
No. I mean, he came down wherever he could, as pilots will. And when I saw that, and then there's a gully right near there where it had apparently slipped down and would be out of sight. And then when you hear the strange characteristics of the smelly stuff that was given off by the so-called monster, and when I heard Frank talk about that Mr. Stewart, the reporter, had knelt down. I mean, he'd gone down close to the ground. And got a whiff of what was going on there. The kids got sick, you see, and that was peculiar. And they turned tail and ran. Here are a bunch of kids going up a hill. They see this strange thing 10 feet high, but they get sick from whatever it's putting out, a fluid. And when Frank told me that Colonel Levitt, the National Guard guy, had samples of the fluid, samples of metal that had been picked up that night, and that Mr. Stewart had a sample of the metal, which had been taken from him, and Levitt never heard back from whoever he sent the stuff to. Now we're getting the standard intrigue, if you will.
Right.
The government knows, and they're sure not telling us.